She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And today, again, we are not going to tell you what to think, but we are going to ask you to. And a special, special, special thank you for joining us today. A special thanks to the Fairfax companies who bring this show to you. A large part of why we can do this is because of their support, and we are forever grateful for that. But the big announcement is this is the one-year anniversary of the launch of the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, so I'm going to do a little bell ringing. I just have to, because there's bells and whistles, and it's pretty exciting. And our deepest gratitude from the entire Green team for how you've helped us grow, and we tweeted us and put stuff up on Facebook and shared information. It's pretty amazing. A big thanks to Darren Beal from FreeCycle. He was our first guest and put it out on the International FreeCycle Network, and we had a lot of fun that day. There were balloons, which are not very earth-friendly, and people brought over plants, and we had some champagne. So our guests today, we're very happy to have in studio Dave Johnson, who is the Director of Corporate Marketing for Rainbird Corporation, and you are going to learn everything you ever wanted to know about Rainbird. And I'm surprised how many people do know what Rainbird is, because I personally have never put in a sprinkling system, but I know a lot about it too. And before we got on with the show with Dave, just remember that I'm here every Saturday live at MrsGreensWorld.com, and we'd like to remind you that you can listen to us on your iPhone or Droid. I'm thrilled when I have a pre-record and can listen to my own show. Modern technology. And don't forget to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. If you have any questions, info at Mrs. Green's World, because we want to be a solution to your concerns. So Dave, thank you for being here with me today.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I'm excited to be here.
I know, and there is a lot to share. First of all, why don't we start with what is Rainbird? Because it's big.
Well, thank you. We are. Rainbird is the largest manufacturer of irrigation equipment in the world. So we've been around a long time too, over 75 years. So we know what we're doing when it comes to irrigation systems and sprinklers.
And one of the things that I think is really impressive in doing my research, which I always do, is that 1933, is that when you started?
Right. That's when the first invention was made, which is the impact sprinkler. A lot of people know it as the sprinkler that makes the ch-ch-ch-ch sound, right?
I do know that sprinkler.
So, yeah, that was 1933 in Southern California, and the company was founded in shortly thereafter in 1935.
Well, the thing that I love, being a champion for the planet, you're still privately held.
Well, that's right. That's right.
I love that.
No big corporate interests there. We're owned by the same family that founded the company. And from the very beginnings of the company, the reason it was founded was to conserve water. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about that, but that's still what drives the company today.
I think more and more and more consumers are more educated, they're more conscious in their purchasing, and things like that are really going to matter, especially with all the debacles that are happening on Wall Street. Wall Street is not dictating your business plan, and I had to bring that out.
Yep, that's true. That's true.
So is there like a core corporate philosophy or core values that Rainbird has that you would like to talk about a little bit? Because I think that really matters. That's what drives you and why you're successful.
Exactly. There really is. And again, like you said, it's not Wall Street dictating that philosophy. It's the private ownership of the company and where we come from. And just really recently in the company's history, we've defined that philosophy into something we call the intelligent use of water.
Which I really want you to talk about. It intrigues me like crazy.
Yeah, well, so it's an all-encompassing philosophy. Like I said, from the very beginnings of the company, water conservation was important. The whole reason the impact sprinkler was invented was so citrus growers in Southern California would no longer have to flood irrigate their fields. So very unintelligent use of water. They had to irrigate their fields, but they would literally open up canals and flood irrigate these huge fields and just use water very inefficiently. And so this impact sprinkler was invented that put water basically just where it was needed, when it was needed. And, you know, the number of inventions and products we've created since then just boggles the mind. But about 15 years ago or so now, we decided to kind of codify that mission statement into this short, catchy statement called the Intelligent Use of Water. It has not only to do with the products that we make, but our efforts to educate people about water conservation, the leadership position we try to take within the irrigation industry and the water conservation effort as a whole, and then also partnerships that we form. You know, we realize we can't do it alone. We're here, you know, with people like you trying to get the message out about water conservation. And so all four of those cornerstones, if you will, come together to make the intelligent use of water.
So the thing that intrigues me from, if you're looking at the 30,000 foot level, you don't just provide like irrigation systems for my backyard. First of all, I don't have any grass. I want to go on record as saying that. But when you said that, everybody in the on the show who's listening is going to know exactly what Rainbird is forever because everybody has heard that noise. But what do you do in terms of the education and the partnerships when you have everything from golf courses to sports arenas to huge buildings to irrigation systems? I told you this when I talked with you a while ago, my friend Jeanette Mare from Ben's Bells. She said, oh, Rainbird, I was in Ace Hardware the other day, and that's the system I bought. Well, she's a homeowner. So you have such a diverse demographic of clients. How do you manage that? You're the corporate director of marketing. So,
well, it is hard. We have a lot of constituents out there, if you will. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We really started as an agricultural irrigation company, right, with the citrus growers, but quickly moved on. One of our very first customers was, I think, the Los Angeles County Golf Course. So we moved on from ag to golf to sports fields to residential systems. And really we look at it as, you know, irrigation is needed. So one of the questions a lot of people ask us is, why is an irrigation company so concerned with water conservation? It sounds almost congruous, because doesn't irrigation use an awful lot of water? And why would an irrigation company want to preach about using less water? But when you think about it, irrigation is the need to take water from one place where it is and apply it where it's needed to do things like grow food, make, you know, fiber for the clothes we wear, to creating green spaces that are for our health and enjoyment. And so we know that there's always going to be this need for irrigation. And from the very beginnings of the company, like I said, we've wanted to educate people on the importance of doing the process of irrigation most efficiently, knowing that the process is required, and seeing how people did it before Rainbird, you know, encourages us every day to create things that allow them to do it more effectively.
But even looking at that perspective, talk about early adopters. Now it's a hot topic. I mean, there are probably a book a week being written about water, our most precious resource. You know Robert Glennon.
Yep.
I mean, there are people that are out there ringing the alarm bell. Companies are buying water rights. Who was the brainchild, or how did it happen that you so committed to this early on? Because to me, the translation now is, for your customers, including me, including the farms, including everybody, we want to know how to save money. And if water is going to become more and more expensive, so are you feeling like you're really at the right place in the market?
Definitely, but you hit the nail on the head when you talked about early adopters. I mean, I talk about
1933.
Well, that, yeah. but even going back to just the beginnings of the intelligent use of water philosophy, you know, 12, 15 years ago now, back then it felt like we were maybe not hitting the right notes in the marketplace. I don't think people were necessarily ready for it, because let's face it, in many parts of the country, water is free or cheap. And you talk about
and
saving
wasted.
Money.
Yeah.
And so what's free or cheap comes with that perceived value. If you're not paying anything for it, people
right.
don't value it. And even back then, and even now, it's still a problem where people just don't. Yeah, they kind of know in the back of their mind that water isn't, you know, it's not an endless supply and there's costs associated with it. But at the end of the day, they look at their water bill. It's not that expensive. Why should I save water? Well, that was 12 years ago. Fast forward to today, and it's finally going past just the people who are, you know, pardon the term, but so-called green people,
yes,
to more
yes.
mainstream people that understand that this is a real problem, and it's getting worse, and especially as more and more people move out west. You know, we have kind of particular problems here in the Southwest and the West, but it's growing all over the world. I've seen stats saying, you know, by 2025, somewhere around 20% of the population around the globe are not going to have access to clean drinking water. I mean, so that's a real problem.
And it's already 150 some billion people don't have it today, and it is going to be a problem. And I remember when Robert Glennon was on one of my first shows, and he said, and it says it in his book, that the wars of the future are going to be fought over water rights. I, of course, don't like to put that out there to the universe, but we can be conscious consumers and help share it. I agree with you that there's still people that have an attitude. They turn the water on, they walk around the kitchen, they go and, you know, turn lights on, clear the table, and the water's still running. Not when Mrs. Green is in the house, because it kills me how much we flush down our toilets. It's,
you know,
drinking water.
I agree. And, you know, really those are little things, but it all comes
collectively
down.
Adds up.
It adds up, but it also reflects an attitude. I mean, if you're willing to do that, there's bigger things that you implicitly say you'll live with and support. And there's just so many things people can do. So you talked about our education programs. I mean, it goes everywhere from, from selling our product to educating people on the need for the product, but just also then to change their attitudes. Talking about, you know, we've published white papers on the water supply problem, both water quality, access, and availability, to get people to understand that this is a real problem, where it's going, how bad it's going to get in the future. You know, I hope we don't get to the point where wars are being waged over it. I hope we find the solution. Because I think it's out there, and I think it goes not only to, I mean, irrigation is just one small part of it, but I think ultimately it has to go to people understanding the value of water and valuing it and paying for it what it's worth, because I don't think in many parts of the country or the world that's happening, so people don't carry that value.
And it all ties in, and I don't want to sound cliche, but my tagline is, we don't want to tell people what to think, we just want them to, and the intelligent use of water is huge. I mean, it just think about it, people, and we live in the desert. It's going to hit us. I mean, the people I've had on my show that are predicting our future, it's a shorter time frame, and we have to be conscious of it. All you have to do is drive around and see how the drought has impacted this region. It's I hope we get through the summer without a lot of challenges. And
right.
If you're going and using a helicopter to get water out of lakes and there aren't any, that becomes, you know, a whole issue. So what do you do about, you have with the diversity of constituents? Do you, and I know you're the director of corporate marketing, but in terms of your sales teams, how are they approaching new clients or prospective clients or continued customers about the education piece, the intelligent use of water? Is that a key ingredient of your sales, you know, philosophy?
Well, definitely we try to do that. So it depends on who the constituent is and who the exact customer is, but we really try to educate people and get that into the lexicon of the business. So I'll take an example. So one of our biggest types of customers are contractors who install residential systems that go in the home. And looking back a very short period of time, it wasn't necessarily a good sales message to go to contractors and say, well, you know, our products save a lot more water than typical products.
Because
they're not the
end
users.
That's right.
So it's more a matter of saying, okay, well, you do get what you're looking for out of our products. They're easy to install. They last a long time, all that kind of stuff. But as part of your pitch to your customers, talk about that you install Rainbird products and they're going to save X amount of water, or this is why it's the best choice for your system, and make it part of your sales pitch, Mr. Contractor, and help differentiate yourself. You know, we're not so worried about differentiating Rainbird, but differentiating contractor A from contractor B who might install some other product that doesn't save as much water. And then the light bulb goes on and they get it. Okay, even though I'm not going to be paying the bill for the water, it still can be part of my sales message. But then you talk to golf course superintendents who are some of the biggest water users
out there.
But I think they get a bit of a bad rap. I think the golf industry in and of itself, first of all, it's a good use of water when you look at the overall space of a golf course as opposed to maybe building more houses or something on there and wasting a lot of water. And the golf course industry has been so forward-thinking at adopting efficient irrigation practices from smart controllers, which we can talk about, to using non-potable water supplies, recycled water. And so they're kind of leading the way in getting other people to think, oh, if this is good for a golf course, that, you know, their livelihood depends on beautiful green grass that may not be there without irrigation, well, then maybe these same technologies will work for me, you know, to grow my little garden or plants in my
yard. There's a conundrum there inherent in this whole thing to me. I had a wonderful professor from the university on my show who talked about creating wildlife habitat in your yard and how important it is, even if it's a tiny little patch or a bird bath, or we have the bird feeder outside, because of how it helps things. Well, we don't want to get rid of golf courses in southern Arizona because there's a huge cooling factor. It's not just how pretty it is. We're getting so hot here, like it's hot as Hades this summer. We don't want to do away with all the green. There's a lot of the circle of life. If you're using water intelligently, that does sound cliche.
No, you're right.
Really, to keep some green spots.
Yeah. I mean, it can be, you know, we're talking about golf courses, and I think they can be a bit of a polarizing topic. And I just think there's a place for intelligently managed golf courses, even
I
here
totally
in the desert.
Agree.
I mean, just with the health and the recreational benefits. And again, they're so forward thinking. You would be surprised at really how little water a golf course, especially a desert golf course, well-managed desert golf course, uses compared to other uses that might be done on that land that are not as efficient. So it can be polarizing, and think what you want. Again, I think it's good, healthy debate, but I think overall it's good for even the Southwest U.S. to have some golf courses, and again, we love working with them to think of even more ways to save water.
I totally agree. And I mentioned it earlier in the show that one of my sponsors is the Fairfax Companies. And pretty much what they do is post-construction and landscaping waste. Well, Jason is, talk about early adopter, he started turning the green waste into organic composting. And now he's partnering with a company with a group at the U of A. It's the U of A to absolutely bring life back into the mall by using an organic tea. So there's Jason's composting and then this organic tea that is a patent from somewhere deep within the University of Arizona to absolutely and positively bring life back to that grass. It's like walking on concrete. It's dead. It's so over-fertilized. And to do it in an organic way. And I want to put my feet on the grass. Like, who doesn't want to do that? So I think there are things. Another guy I had on, Back to Feed, they have an organic compound that they're selling to farms all over to organically bring the soil back to life so that it absorbs water.
Right.
That's one of the main purposes before it. So it's an exciting time to see the changes.
Yeah. And talking about grass, too, I mean, like you said, we're here in Tucson, and I think Tucsonans are very forward thinking. You know, when you look at Tucson versus some other southwestern cities, there isn't a lot of grass here. And that's probably appropriate. I mean, again, even as an irrigation company, we're not saying grass belongs everywhere. By no means is that the case. But as you said, a lot of people like it, and it does offer cooling effects and things like that, and the benefits, the health benefits, and the recreation benefits. But it doesn't belong everywhere. And there's appropriate landscapes to have based on your location, and grass might be right, might not be right, but whatever you've got, make sure you're irrigating it as efficiently as possible is our message.
Totally, and I can give you a Kodak moment for that. We're big farmers market attendees, so also missing our grandchildren. So we go to this one part at St. Philip's Plaza, and guess what the patch of grass is filled with? Families, kids. You don't want to say, honey, go run on the concrete. There's a patch of grass there that, you know, James and I just go and we watch the families because it's so absolutely and positively relaxing, and you don't have to be afraid of falling. And there is such an appropriate use for that. So I just got the 1 minute signal, and I have a propensity to start asking a very important question right before the break. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be proud of myself. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. It is our 1 year anniversary. We are happy to have in studio with us Dave Johnson, who's the Director of Corporate Marketing for Rainbird Corporation. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the number of patents they have, the 4,000 product services. We're not going to name them all, and we'll talk about National Public Gardens Day and some of the other initiatives for things you're doing in schools. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we're giving you lots to think about today. Happy anniversary to us. This is the first anniversary of the launch of the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. A heartfelt from the bottom of my very green heart to all of our listeners and followers and sharers and our great guests that we've had. It's been a wonderful year. It was a big risk and it's working. So thank you so much for believing in the mission and vision of Mrs. Green's World. Our in-studio guests for this one year anniversary, it's a big, big, big company. It's called Rainbird Corporation. They are international. Their corporate philosophy is called the intelligent use of water. So how appropriate that you, Dave Johnson, the Director of Corporate Marketing, get to be on the show and join me today. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you. And I didn't say it before, but congratulations on the 1 year. It's
right?
Great.
It's just like, where did it
very
go?
Exciting.
And I will tell you, launching a radio network, if it was one of those things where if we had known then what we know now, maybe would have said, you know, maybe not so much. But you know what? We did it. We figured it out. And we are live here every Saturday. We haven't missed a show.
Well, that's how good things happen. So
it is. It's really good. It's been an exciting ride. And I'll never forget when my friend Cindy said, I think we should go to the internet. And I'm like, go to the internet for what and do what? And here we are still cranking. So thank you so much for being with us. Shout out always. You can find out about great shows like this by following me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. Go to my website at MrsGreensWorld.com, and we have the buttons for all those. So become a part of Mrs. Green's World. Okay, we talked a lot about the corporate philosophy. I think we should mention that you do have 130 patents. That's a lot of patents. And 4,000, I got this off your website, products and services.
I think it's actually a little outdated. Somebody just asked me the other day how
there's
many
more?
Patents. Oh, yeah, I think... I think we counted somewhere in the neighborhood of about 250 patents now, so it's almost double that.
Got to change that.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
It's been kind of the boilerplate for a while, but yeah, we've got a lot of innovation packed into our products, and people wonder, boy, can sprinklers really have that many patents? And it's true. There's always room for improvements and new innovations.
So do you have, like, I call them the magicians that are in the R&D section working on their latest graded invention and then patenting it? How does it come about? Do people approach you to license their product?
Well, we occasionally get that, yes, but most of our products are homegrown. We've got people that have been with the company literally 50 years. Just they know irrigation and they know hydraulics and the movement of water and the way to disperse it the most effectively. And they just keep, as technology catches up with their ideas and manufacturing processes can accommodate their ideas, you know, new things just happen. And that doesn't even include, that's kind of thinking about the mechanics, where a lot of these innovations come in is on the electronic side. So like controlling these systems that we put in the ground, really that's where it's become phenomenally innovative in the last few years.
You know, it just blows me away that there are things in our lifetime. It's a wonderful time to be alive. I mean, I'm 61. I have seen so many changes in the technology world. Some of them are daunting to me. For the most part, not, because I want to learn and I'm going to be younger next year. That's my new mantra. But just being able to do things, for example, you know, our cabin burned and it's been a year, but it's not a sad thing to bring up on purpose. But we had the ability to turn our heat on from our telephones. That's the new technology, where you don't have to get up there and freeze for 3 days, but you can turn it on remotely. So those are the kinds of things you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
With electronics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we've got the same thing with our irrigation system. So imagine some of these land management people who have lots of parks or something, or multiple golf courses to operate, they can actually sit there and manage their irrigation systems over their phone. You know,
so efficient.
Yeah, one of the big water wasters can be, you know, what if a leak happens, a water main breaks in your system? You know, in the old days, it might be literally day. It happens on the weekend. You don't know for days, and you waste millions of gallons of water. Now you can immediately get a note on your phone.
An alarm.
Yeah, an alarm on your phone goes off, and they know, and they run, and they can fix it. Or you know, or do whatever they need to do to manage the system.
It's the most positive use of technology, and there are so many. I mean, I think there's definitely something called Facebook fatigue out there, but that's only one part of technology. And don't get tired of following us on Facebook. So let's talk about, you have a contest going on, and I want to talk about that, but I also want to talk about how you, with the constituency, I want to go back to that, with the vast diversity of constituents. Tell us about the water film competition and how you are working on getting people to enter. What a great opportunity.
Well, so one of our elements of our philosophy and our communication strategy was, let's leverage all the other people, you know, like yourself, that's out there that understand or have their own views on water conservation. And again, not telling them what to think. So I like your slogan.
I love that.
Let's,
I do.
Let's let them tell us what they think. So we came up with this idea about 5 years ago now of having a film competition where folks can make a short film illustrating their thoughts on water conservation. It can be anything from illustrating the problem and trying to communicate that to people, to here's some solutions, to just, you know, pure entertainment value. And so we accept, you know, last year we got in the neighborhood of 150 short films submitted to us from everybody from, you know, student, total amateurs to semi-professional folks who were really into making films. About 150 of these, and we looked through them, we picked out 6 finalists, and we made some awards and had a big Hollywood premiere and everything with these films.
Where? Where was it?
It was actually in Beverly Hills, California, at the Paley Center for Television
Arts. I guess I didn't make the list. list of invitees.
Well, definitely this year you'll be there because it's
That's
a really
exciting.
Great event.
It is.
And it goes beyond that. So we can take the films and use them in our promotional materials after that. And really it's part of this education cycle that we were talking about, using them to get the word out. Anything we can do, you know, people, like you said, Facebook fatigue, you know, you can only put so many times on our Facebook page, hey, save water, here's some save water tips. So part of it is, well, how about look at this film that somebody else made? Rainbird didn't make it, somebody else made it, and let's discuss what they, you know, look at what they think about water conservation.
It's that third party endorsement concept, and it's so timely that you bring that up because today I literally read this blog post, and it was so apropos of what you're talking about. This guy who is a very famous blogger, it's how he makes his living, was talking about four ways to sell your products on your blog. Because he said at the end of the day, whether you're Mrs. Green selling the concept or whatever, and Dave, this is what he said, that people want to be taught. So I thinking of Rainbird, you want to educate people. I certainly do. And then one of the things that he harped on is how important it is to embed short videos on your blogs, how to. He said people inform them, entertain them. But if you're blogging, almost every blog you have should include some short clip because people want to see that in this day and age. So that's a great use of the new technology.
Well, especially when it comes, I think, to demonstrating a product or a new idea.
It's so much easier than reading instructions if you're
right.
Me. I'm a visual learner.
You look at our website, there's more and more video clips on there now and just literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views. And it really opens your eyes to, oh, this is the way people want to consume information now. So it falls right in line with the film competition. And before I forget, I'll tell people how to enter. We have a website set up for just the film competition called IUOWfilm.com. That stands for Intelligent Use of Water Film Competition. So IUOWfilm.com. And you can learn all about it. You can win up to $15,000 and have fun in the process of making a film about water conservation.
And who knows where that kind of seed that's planted will go.
Exactly.
With somebody working for you and developing the next great patent, yeah. Or someone, some kid that wants to get a start in doing this.
And
I think we've had
winners in the past everywhere from, I forget how old he was, but I think about a 14-year-old kid who made a song about water conservation and did his own film, you know, up to professional filmmakers who this is, you know, they're living and they feel passionate about getting, you know, the water conservation message out, and they view this as just one more way to do
it. And part of their winning is that, do you fly them into the awards? That's awesome.
Yeah, so
I love that.
And they're hosted by Jack Hanna. I don't know if you know Jack Hanna.
I do.
The guy from the Columbus Zoo who goes on like David Letterman with all these
goofy
animals. So last year we had a huge boa constrictor there and an alligator and a kangaroo. And
it's a big deal.
Yeah, so we have him hosting it. We've got an all, you know, a professional judging group there that represents everything from the irrigation industry to the film industry to, you know, to the water purveyors, you know, people that are experts in water film and irrigation, all judging these films. But the audience who attends this screening in Beverly Hills gets to vote too. So we've got the audience choice and the judge's
choice. Call to action from the public.
Yeah,
it works.
That's
it's
a really
great.
Fun event.
Now, have you gotten anybody from around the world, or is it limited to United States?
No, it's not. It's open to anywhere around the world. Last year, the kid who did the film was here studying in the United States, but he had gone back to India where he was from and filmed his grandfather and how he saved water in India and how he produced water-saving devices right there on his farm. And our very first winner 5 years ago was from Italy, and we've had entries from all over the world. So we welcome that, all the different perspectives.
How fun is that? Now, how long does the competition run?
Well, we're accepting nomination or entries now, that is, until August 15th. And that's the cutoff, so you can just go and you can actually upload your film right to the website. And then within a few days, we'll get together and pick the usually five or six finalists. We don't really limit it, you know, if they're deserving films, we want to bring them out there. But there's usually about five or six finalists. And then after picking the finalists, you know, Rainbird really doesn't have any more say. We've got this judges panel and the audience, and then from there, people pick the winner.
And you know that I fashion myself as a social media maven, tongue in cheek. Is there a separate Facebook page for this, or are you promoting it through the Rainbird Facebook page and the Rainbird Twitter? Because you have an active Twitter following.
We do. And typically, it doesn't have its own separate feed, so it's part of the Rainbird Facebook campaign as well as our Twitter.
People really like one click anyway.
Yeah,
so I think that's really smart.
Yeah, you mentioned another one of our programs, National Public Garden Day, which we'll talk about later. That has a separate identity all its own, but a lot of these intelligent use of water activities that we do, and the film competition is just one of them, we tend to just integrate that into our overall marketing message for Rainbird.
Well, I do most of the Facebook myself, and there's no secret that I have a very young person helping me with Twitter, and she's great, and I will help promote it. I'll let her know, because it's such a great thing for the planet, and you know what else? It's fun. People really want to do things that are fun, because there's a lot of heavy messages going on out there about the shape our planet's in.
Well, there are.
So tapping into the creativity and the information and the fun, it's another ingredient that I absolutely love. Okay, so should we switch now to National Public Gardens Day, which totally intrigues me. It's a huge partnership.
Yeah.
Rainbird helped start it.
We did. So it's a partnership between Rainbird and the American Public Gardens Association, which, of course, is a nonprofit organization to promote the ideas of public gardens. So most communities have public gardens run by nonprofits or foundations or whatever, where they encourage anything from native plant growth to just the beauty of gardens. And, you know, we've got a couple here in Tucson. We're very lucky, but almost every city's got them. There's over, I forget the numbers, but hundreds of public gardens throughout the United States. And we had been in partnership with the APGA for a while, and because it just seemed to make sense for Rainbird. The way that they promote conservation in general and water conservation specifically, and the message about the importance of green spaces, fit. And we said, well, there's not a day to honor these gardens. We got to make one. So we just made up.
We made up a national holiday.
And now, 4 or 5 years later, it actually gets a fair amount of traction. Maybe a lot of your listeners haven't heard of it yet, but you will. It comes the Friday before Mother's Day, because Mother's Day is such a great day to bring your family to the garden, right? Bring mom to the garden.
Totally.
So we want to bring awareness right around that time, kind of kicking off the season, and just get that, you know, it's just another vehicle to get that message out about how important our green spaces, and by the way, they're brought to you by, you know, efficient irrigation, and how important is that?
And the intelligent use of water.
Exactly.
don't hesitate to throw that in.
Exactly.
So when you say there are places here in Tucson, is it like the Botanical Gardens and Tohono O'odham Park? Love them.
Yeah, I think the Desert Museum is also part of the association. So that's the other thing. I mean, there's zoos and all sorts of things that are part of this APGA entity. And it's just, places where people can go to enjoy nature and get the message about conservation.
And a hidden treasure that we have here is the Rose Garden at Reed Park.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
When we had little kids, we used to go to the zoo all the time and go to the lake there, feed the ducks, blah, blah, blah. And they have a gorgeous rose garden. But how do you partner in those when you have a place like Tohono O'odham and botanical gardens? I'm always hawking nationally with my followers, go find those hidden treasures in your town, because most towns have them. So do you proactively partner with them? Do they help promote it?
Well, we do. So, you know, there's so many out there that we can't personally partner
hands-on
with each of them.
That's right, because you have another patent.
We pick a handful, anywhere from 15 to 20 gardens throughout the United States where we're really, really hands-on, and we help them put programs together. We've gotten everything from congressional recognition of the day and, you know,
awesome,
declaring it a day down to, you know, city mayors and things. We do all sorts of, we have street teams out on the street in those cities talking to people, handing out flyers and little packets of seeds and things like that. But then we also provide tools for all the hundreds of other gardens to say, hey, you know, this is your day. Make it your own. Put it in conjunction with something that you're doing. A lot of people are already doing something for Mother's Day around their garden. Well, use this as a way to package that. Say, you know, we've got this plant sale going on. Oh, by the way, did you know it was National Public Garden Day? And it's just another reason for people to say, oh, yeah, I kind of knew Tona Chula was over there, but I never, you know, I never got to go. But they hear about this, and it just gets more people interested.
And, oh,
in
by the
it.
Way, when you talk about Tona Chula Park, most people in Tucson, they did surveys. I've been in focus groups. They're like, what? Well, for Mother's Day, talk about going to a wonderful brunch in a beautiful setting in nature, in the desert. I mean, dot, dot, dot. And the botanical gardens, they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. I am really not believing that I'm getting the 1 minute sign again. And this is just proof positive that time flies when you are having fun and getting informed and thinking. So we are going to go to another short break. And in studio guest today is Dave Johnson, who's the director of corporate marketing for Rainbird Corporation. When we come back, I hope we have time to talk a little bit about the Green Schoolhouse program, and I would like to know some of your product services. Not all 4,000, but we really should copy that a little bit and what the call to action is. We'll be right back. Please stay here with us.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And we're thinking big today about Rainbird Corporation, which is huge. It's humongous. I love using that word. It is our one-year anniversary. We have in studio with us Dave Johnson, who's the director of corporate marketing for Rainbird Corporation, which is, I am sure, a challenge each and every day, Dave. And I think we should, if someone just tuned in, it's so noteworthy to me that you were started in 1933 and that you're still privately held. It's becoming to me more and more and more important. It's easy to sell out. And not that that's bad always. I don't want to say it's inherently bad, but you're really controlling your destiny and you're not being driven by outside forces, earnings per share.
Yeah,
I think it's huge.
As a private company, you know, we don't talk about ourselves that much in terms of financial performance and things like that, which is one of the benefits. You know, you look at the reason for the company being our intelligent use of water philosophy that we've been talking about. You know, maybe in some public companies that philosophy couldn't have been pushed as far as we've pushed it because, well, does it maximize the bottom line? Well, not always. Long term, I think it will, because that's where the whole world needs to be going, is thinking more about water conservation. But it's not something that's going to build the sales for the next quarter, next week. You know, it's a
right.
long-term thinking process.
And so kudos to Rainbird for having that vision,
Thank you.
Early adopters. Okay, so we are going to talk about, this is one of nearest and dearest to my heart, education. And you're involved in that. And it's a program that I believe is called the Green Schoolhouse Series. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It's so important to me that there's a corporate steward out there that really gets it. Let's educate.
Well, first, I can't take all the credit for the Green Schoolhouse Series.
Would you like to? It'd be okay.
I would like
nobody's
to,
here. Nobody else is here.
it's not a program Rainbird developed, but it's certainly something that we've got
you
on
partner
board
with.
We partner with a group called the Green Schoolhouse Series, and we partnered with them because their message is so great. So what they do, a lot of people know what Habitat for Humanity is, where folks get together.
Terry D., good friend.
And the
yes.
community builds homes for underprivileged families and things like that. Well, this is kind of Habitat for Humanity for schools. They're going around and they're building schoolhouses in underprivileged neighborhoods, typically. And I've seen the first one in Phoenix. And these kids don't have a lot. The school that they're going to right now isn't the best facility in the world.
More than ever.
Right. And so the Green Schoolhouse Series comes in and they're building a brand new schoolhouse that is built from volunteer labor and materials and state-of-the-art and LEED certified, designed to be LEED certified. And if you don't know what LEED certified is, it's basically a sustainable building, so made with recycled materials, designed so that it maximizes energy efficiency and water efficiency. And it was just such a great story, we just had to become part of it.
And I mean, LEED certified means you have a greenhouse and they've looked at everything and you have to go through a national standard certification process. I had no idea, and I just wrote down in big red letters, show guest. They would be a great show for us to have on about this because
definitely.
I didn't know about it. And Habastore is one of our sponsors. So, I mean, Terry D., he's one of my BFFs. Love what they do. Love what the Habastore does and Habitat for Humanity. So that's awesome. Okay. Next question, I think it's there's no wrong answer, and I never put anybody on the spot on my show. Hopefully, they've never told me that or never tweeted something negative about Mrs. Green. I think there is the complicated issue with companies that are committed to something like the intelligent use of water, which is huge and not to be diminished in any way. But you're a big corporation, so your carbon impact just as a company, not what products you're selling, but the number of employees, the number of buildings. What are you doing in terms of what I call green from the inside out or sustainability? And it's a complex issue. I understand that. You don't just shift people. I'm working with Chapman, largest car dealership in Southern Arizona, one of them, and the wheels turn slowly.
Well, you're right. It's a big, complicated issue, and I'm certainly not going to sit here and misrepresent what we do. I think Rainbird's got a lot of work to do in this area, but on the flip side, we've also done a lot of work, and it's come from this realization as we do more and more to market ourselves and our products to our customers via the intelligent use of the water, we've had to look back on the inside. You know, I remember just when I started with the company about 10 years ago now, it was sitting in a meeting with some customers, and the question actually came up. They're like, you preach this intelligent use of water, but I don't even see any recycling bins here in this meeting room.
It's going to be more and more important.
And we
yes.
said, well, you're right. So we've had to go back and look. So now we've got recycling programs. We just, in our big facility here in Tucson, we installed waterless urinals. We've
That's huge.
Recycling programs in our, we've got factories all over the world and encourage them to use, recycled plastics where it's required or where it's possible.
And where it's feasible.
Right.
It's not always feasible.
And we've got a whole committee looking at energy use, and we've reduced our energy consumption dramatically over the last few years. So while I think we've got a ways to go there, we've done a lot, and we've got more on our plate to do. But, when you've got facilities and people all over the world, it's hard just to flip a switch
from
not thinking about it to being the poster child for it.
Right.
But we're definitely thinking about it and moving, I think, in the right direction. And again, it came from the intelligent use of water philosophy, turning that back on ourselves and saying, well, are we doing all we can?
And more and more and more, you can't put out a sustainability report because there's going to be that long fact finder that's going to look and see it, and they're going to be Googling like crazy. So I think it's great. I think what I always say is forward motion, small steps, big impact. Just the recycling of paper for these big companies. We have paper shortages. We have tree shortages. And there's a shortage and a need for paper to be recycled, to be made into things like paper towels and toilet paper, which I happen to like both of them. So.
Well, and trying to reduce our paper use in total is
yes,
one thing,
the first
too, that we're doing. And you mentioned, you know, recycling, paper shortage and tree shortage. One thing that struck me as I got into this intelligent use water message is how inextricably linked all types of resources are. You know, when I heard about, you know, that it's not just a water issue, it's an energy issue too. I think I heard the stat, don't quote me on the stat, but it's some phenomenally big number, like 40% of the electricity in California is used to move water.
It's true.
And
it is
so,
close
so
to
when
that.
You think
it's
of, yeah.
Appalling.
And when you think of say the energy to make paper, so it's not just the water to grow the tree, it's the energy to make the paper and the water to make the paper. I mean, all these things are linked so closely, so you can't go out with just one message, or you can't just talk about the intelligent use of water and then, you know, not have a recycling program in your
facility. And with all
those
manufacturing things, there are usually nasty byproducts associated with it. So you're dealing with multiple layers. And thank you for pointing out that I write about this all the time. The first R is reduce. People say to me, well, I reuse my plastic bags. And I say now, if they're close enough friends, I say, really? 97% of the energy is already consumed when it gets in your hot little hands, and it never biodegrades. So why don't you just reduce your use of them and take a reusable bag with you?
Right.
But I want to keep my friends, so I'm being really careful about that. And I don't want to ever sound preachy, but I do want to inspire people to action. Now, I just want to go back. This would be like a good question to have asked in the very beginning. When I saw on your website that you have, and maybe this too is outdated, but 4,000 products and services. Talk about the services. What kind of services does that mean? I understand the selling of all of the irrigation systems and on, but what kind of services does Rainbird provide?
Well, it runs the gamut, really, when you think about what's needed for an irrigation system. So it starts with designing and specifying irrigation systems. So people have to be trained in this, you know, to understand water flow and hydraulics and things like that. So we'll design a system for you. Even if you're a homeowner.
Oh, that's huge.
If you want, right. Just send us a sketch of your yard and you get back a professionally designed system. And that's free of charge. Services that we offer for pay. We'll do everything up to and including managing entire communities' water usage. So when it comes to installing one of our big irrigation systems, there's flow meters and all sorts of diagnostic tools that can be intimidating for some people to use or to get certified in. So we'll actually then not only sell you a system, but run it for you as well to make sure you're getting maximum use out of it. And we're always looking for more services that we can get into to make it easier for people to conserve. One of the things, this is kind of a product and a service, but we just started selling wind power generation units in the UK to go along with our pump stations.
Awesome.
So we said that electricity on a golf course can be one of the top three spenders of money, basically. And a lot of that comes from, again, what I was talking about, moving water.
Right,
so we said, well, let's make windmills and install those with our pumps and help them manage both their water and their energy usage.
So it's a windmill, not the big, huge wind farms, but
yeah,
a windmill.
Yeah, the guys in charge of it will kill
gosh.
Me calling it a windmill. I'm not supposed to. It's a wind turbine.
A wind turbine.
Yeah, but
of
you've seen the wind farms. Yeah, so it's a wind turbine, and you put it in, you know, certain areas of the world and country are amenable to these things, but you put them up and, you know, they get all their electricity. You've heard any electricity that's over and above what you use, you can sell it back to the electric company.
It's
and stuff.
Renewable.
So, yeah.
It's clean.
So
I mean,
it made sense
smart.
For us. And what a leap for us to make. And we're just starting in that, right? So this is 1933 for wind power generation for rain. I mean, we're just,
I love it.
Just getting started in that, but it just fit together and it goes with that combining of resources that I talked about, you know, electricity and water being so tightly connected.
Now, in terms of, that's an interesting segue too, in terms of where do you think the United States stacks up in terms of being, at the head of the line for water conservation? Do you find some of the other countries are much more conscious of it and much more aware of it and more interested in your products? Where do we stack up as a country?
Unfortunately, not very high. I mean, I think it's getting better. And again, I don't have a list of stats with me, but I believe the average amount of consumption of fresh water per capita per person in the United States is somewhere around 100 gallons. And you go to a country like, and I'm not talking developing countries, I'm talking developed countries that have access and have the infrastructure like we do, like Australia is a fifth of that, like 20 gallons per person.
It's really sickening. I mean, yeah, we're such massive consumers. Yeah, it's disheartening at times.
And if you compare that to, you know, and there's parts of the country, you know, Southwest is not that great. I think Phoenix uses something like 220 gallons per person, and they don't have it to spare, right? And not to pick on Phoenix, but it's just
I'm kidding. I'm a wildcat. I always say to people, you're in wildcat country here, buddy.
But it just goes to show you how far we've got to go. And it gets to what we talked about at the top of the hour, that people just, it's not at the top of their consciousness yet.
Because it's free. Yeah, you nailed it.
So the intelligent use of water is not a totally self-serving message, because we know it's not necessarily hitting those buttons. You know, not everybody cares about the water that they're using, but the more we keep at it, the more we can let people know that it is something that you need to care about. And by the way, you can have a very high standard quality of living, like in Australia, and use way less water.
Right. You can have that here, too. Even one thing that we've done is put in high-efficiency toilets in our house, because we flush clean water to, you know, we had toilets that I think it was like about 3 gallons. I'm probably off by a gallon. And now we have 1.29 gallons per flush. We have the number one button and the number two button. And I have a chapter in my book that I'm writing called Guilt-Free Flushing. Because when I knew better, I wanted to do better. And every time it was like I felt guilty, because we don't stop and think about it as massive American consumers. It's not mean-spirited. It's just not being conscious.
No. And I think to make it easy, so like what's great about the water-conserving toilets and faucets and things, you just put them in and they work. And you're saving money, and you didn't change
guilt-free.
Your life.
That's right.
So there's a program on now called WaterSense that the EPA is doing, and I got to tout that real quick, because they just added irrigation controllers to this. And so WaterSense is a program like Energy Star, where they label consumer products so people know that they're getting an energy efficient, or in this case, water efficient appliance. And we just got two of our controllers labeled as WaterSense controllers, which means, you know,
awesome.
Take your old one off the wall, put this one on, and you're automatically going to save water.
Right.
How's
right.
that done? Well, they're smart controllers, they're called, and they automatically adjust the amount of water depending on the weather that you're experiencing at that moment. So it kind of goes along with the low flush toilet. You don't got to think about it. You don't got to change what you do. These appliances and the technology are doing it for you. And, you know, I'd like people to think about it, but let's face it, not everyone is. So let's do what we can to make it automatic and easy.
Well, more and more, if they're a part of Mrs. Green's world, they are. And I don't say that lightly. It's part of what I want to do, because I think people want to know, what can I do to make a difference and make it easy? And it has to be affordable. And sometimes there has to be a return on investment. So it's very complicated and very diverse, just like it is shifting the corporate culture of Rainbird in a more sustainable direction. So let's talk again about the film competitions, because repeating is good, and name the website again, and how people can get more involved. I think people listening to the show that never heard about Rainbird will want to engage at some level. So what's the call to action?
Well, there's a couple here. You included a few.
That was a six-part question.
No, that's great. So the Intelligent Use Water Film Competition we talked about earlier,
right.
This is your time to make a film that talks about what you think about with water conservation. It can be a solution. It can be a different way to frame the problem, whatever you want to do. 2 to 10-minute film. Go to iuowfilm.com for rules. You could win $15,000 and a trip out to Beverly Hills, California in September. Or go to our website, rainbird.com, and there's all sorts of stuff on there, on the whole website about our products and services, but also the corporate section on the intelligent use of water, which the film competition is just one of the things that we do.
But that's really fun. I mean, that's fun. And I'm thinking about notifying some of the organizations that I'm in touch with here in Tucson to let them know if they're even aware of it. I mean,
right.
We've got some incredibly wonderful organizations that are doing creative things, and maybe they already know, but If not, they will after they talk to Mrs.
Boy,
Green.
We'd love that. We had 150 films last year. I'd love to have 500 this year to
Wouldn't
look at.
Wouldn't that be so great? And to have, you know, one of them from Tucson win, and then I'm definitely coming to the Hollywood premiere.
Oh, you're
this.
Coming no matter
it's,
what.
So. I'm so excited there. Just invite yourself on the air, Mrs. Green. So, okay, we have about a minute left, Mr. Green, over there. This is the first anniversary of the launch of the Mrs. Green.
Congratulations again.
Thank you, Dave. It was so exciting to see us grow for a year. This is the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Please stay in touch with us through Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, which cracks me up, so that you can find out about guests we have, like Dave Johnson, the Director of Corporate Marketing at Rainbird Corporation. Make it a great green week. If you're in the very, very hot climates, remember to hydrate, and remember the intelligent use of water matters to all of us. Make it a great green week.